Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Chelsea. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email, and I will spell it. It's NESDIS.PA@NOAA.gov. That's NESDIS.PA@NOAA.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will be following can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you don't have that link, I will spell it for you now. It is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. And with that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the May 2021 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Gina Palma, a fire meteorologist from the Great Basin Coordination Center, who will discuss the status of the western U.S. drought and provide a wildfire outlook for the summer and early fall. And our third presenter is Scott Handel, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of July, August, and September. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today's call. I am going to go ahead and start on slide two to look at the global temperatures for the month and the season. So the May 2021 global surface temperature was 0.81 degrees Celsius or 1.46 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This value tied with 2018 as the sixth warmest May in the 140-year record. As you can see from the map on the top left, the month of May was characterized by much warmer than average temperatures across the northern, western, and southeastern Asia. And this actually gave way to Asia's second warmest May on record. Also, other areas that had warmer than average conditions included parts of Africa, northern South America, and across parts of the Pacific, the Atlantic, and Indian Oceans. Record warm May temperatures were also observed across parts of northern Africa, western Asia, and small areas across the Atlantic Ocean and the South Pacific Ocean. We did see some areas that did have cooler than average May temperatures, and these were present across parts of the North America, and actually North America as a whole had, even though the temperature departure was still above average, it was the coolest May since 2011 for North America. Other areas as well included the Eastern Pacific Ocean, Central Asia, India, and Central Europe, and according to our data records, and Europe as a whole had its coolest May since 2004. I wanted to highlight, as you can see from the map, that there was this month an area that did have a record cold May temperature, and that was in eastern India. But that was the only area that we saw that. Looking now at the seasonal temperatures, For the globe as a whole, this was the eighth warmest March through May period since records began in 1880. That's a total of 142 years of data at 0.82 degrees Celsius or 1.48 degrees Fahrenheit above average. I do want to highlight that the March through May period is defined as the Northern Hemisphere meteorological spring and the Southern Hemisphere meteorological autumn. So looking at each hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere had its sixth warmest spring on record, while the Southern Hemisphere had its 11th warmest autumn on record. Looking at the bottom map on the left, we can see that much warmer than average temperatures were observed across parts of North America, South America, Africa, Asia, and across the Northern, Western, and Southern Pacific Ocean, as well as parts of the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. Record warm spring temperatures were present, were limited to small areas across the Middle East, Southeastern Asia, and the Western Pacific Ocean. Cooler than average conditions during the three-month season were observed across parts of the North Atlantic Ocean, the Central and Eastern Pacific Ocean, Central Europe, India, and Southeastern Australia. But as you can see from the map, no land or ocean area had a record cold seasonal temperature. Moving now to slide number three to look at the year-to-date temperatures for the globe. The January through May 2021 global surface temperature was the eighth warmest such period on record, with a temperature departure of 0.77 degrees Celsius or 1.39 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And although the year-to-date, again, the temperature was above average, this was still the smallest temperature for January through May since 2014. During the first 5 months of the year, much warmer than average conditions were observed across parts of the Northern and Western Pacific Ocean, parts of North America, South America, Africa, basically the southern half of Asia, as well as parts of the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. Record warm temperature departures from average were present across parts of Southern Asia and in small areas across Southern South America, Northern Africa, and the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans. Cooler than average conditions during the five-month period were observed across the eastern and central tropical Pacific Ocean, the southern U.S., and in the North Atlantic Ocean. However, again, no land or ocean area had a record cold January through May temperature. Looking ahead, the year 2021 is very likely that will rank among the 10 warmest years on record, but there is only less than 2% chance to rank among the five warmest years on record. So we estimate that with over 90% chance that it will fall between sixth and ninth warmest this year. So moving now to slide number four to take a look, closer look to at the conditions across the U.S. So this month we saw a dominant pattern, and that was a ridge of high pressure across the western U.S. And a trough of low pressure over the east, over much of the east. And so this ridge over the west was what contributed to the very warm and dry conditions to parts of the west. But we also saw above average temperatures across parts of New England and Florida. While temperatures were below average across portions of the northern Rockies, as well as the central and southern plains, as well as southeast and into the Ohio Valley. Statewide temperatures, California had its ninth warmest May on record. However, no state had a statewide temperature that ranked among the 10 coldest Mays on record. Averaged as a whole, the U.S. had a near average temperature of 60.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is only 0.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average. In terms of precipitation, averaged as a whole, it was also near average for the nation at 2.94 inches for the month. Above average precipitation was present across much of the south central contiguous U.S., while drier than average conditions were observed across the west, northern plains, the southeast, and the Great Lakes. During the month, there were several drought emergencies that were declared across portions of California and Oregon during May, with many western reservoirs at very low levels. And on the opposite side of things, torrential rainfall was observed across parts of Texas and Louisiana, specifically in mid-May, and this was associated with a slow-moving thunderstorm. And this brought widespread flash flooding and power outages to the area. And there was actually more than a foot of rain that fell near Lake Charles, Louisiana, and this area is still recovering from damages that were caused by the hurricanes from last year, Hurricane Laura and Delta. Moving now to slide number five. Spring 2021 was warmer than average across much of the contiguous U.S., with a temperature of 52.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 1.7 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this ranked as the 21st warmest spring in the 127-year record for the nation. There were five states across the Great Lakes and the Northeast that did have a top 10 warm spring. However, no state had a below-average statewide temperature for the spring. In terms of precipitation, this spring 2021, was the driest spring since 2006. As you can see, below average precipitation was observed across much of the west, the northern tier, and the east coast, with wetter than average conditions basically isolated to much of the south central U.S. Looking now to slide number six to look at the current state of drought across the contiguous U.S., so this map is the latest map, which was released this morning. As you can see, much of the West is entrenched in drought. According to the drought page, they were stating that about 88% of the West was in some kind of drought, with about 55% being in extreme to exceptional drought. So during this past week, drought was degraded across the north as well as western Oklahoma due to lack of rain. However, there were some areas that did receive beneficial rains, which helped improve drought conditions. And these areas include coastal Oregon, parts of Washington.
Hi, Ira. This is John Bateman. I think you might have gone on mute. Okay. You know what? Let's move on from Ira as she wraps up the drought. And Gina, are you ready to do your part of the presentation?
I am.
Okay, why don't we take it from there? I think we might have lost Ira. Thanks.
Hello? 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 Can you hear me?
Oh, hi. Hi.
Sorry. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Is this Ira?
Yes. I'm sorry. Did you guys not listen to me? Did you not hear
All of a sudden, we weren't able to hear you when you were going through the end part of your drought monitor slide. Did you want to continue that?
Sure. I'll go ahead and start over. Okay. So I apologize for that. So as I had stated, much of the West was entrenched in drought. About 88% of the West was in some kind of drought, and about 55% was in extreme to exceptional drought. Drought degradation did occur across parts of the north as well as western Oklahoma, and this was, again, related to lack of rain. However, there were some areas that did receive some beneficial rain that helped either improve drought or eradicate it completely, and some of these areas include coastal Oregon and Washington, western and eastern Montana, as well as western North Dakota. Outside of the contiguous U.S., Puerto Rico did see some improvements after beneficial rains, specifically eastern Puerto Rico. And in Hawaii, continued dry conditions led to degradation in some areas of the island. So that is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to Dina Palma.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I will be going over the 2021 summer fire season outlook nationally. So this will be starting on slide or page number seven, but if you want to scroll down to page number eight, the significant national significant fire potential outlook is an outlook that is updated monthly, and it forecasts above, below, or near normal significant fire potential for the next 4 months. This combines the current situation with our forecast weather and climate, and also our fuels information, and it's a detailed discussion of the total fire environment. This is a great planning tool. It can be used with severity requests. It can be used for resource allocation and extensions. So if we go now to slide number 9, we've already seen the drought conditions that Ira presented. This drought monitor, the image on the left, is for 1 week ago, so there are some minor changes from this slide and the current drought monitor that Ira showed. But from a fire perspective, the changes that were made or have occurred are really not going to affect our fire season outlook. So when I talk about the drought monitor today from this slide, I will mostly be discussing how the drought impacts our fuels and how the drought conditions impact our fire season and our fire season forecast. As you can see from the drought monitor that I already mentioned, there is exceptional drought over much of the Great Basin into the Southwest, also into California, parts of the Pacific Northwest, and even parts of eastern Montana into the Northern Plains. Eastern areas certainly have seen more precipitation, specifically the Southern Plains, over the last 30 to 60 days. So those areas are certainly not in drought conditions just with the amount of rainfall they've seen, but the main focus going into the fire season will certainly be the western half of the U.S. When we look at our areas of drought, there are many implications we have from that on our fuels and on our fire season outlooks. Not only the drought conditions we've had entering the last month, we're in the midst of our second heat wave across the West, seeing another period of record temperatures in many areas. And again, this is the second one in about 2 or 3 weeks we've seen out West. So that rapidly changes our fuel conditions. Not only do we have the long-term drought, but we also are seeing rapid drying of our fuels, drier than they already were, and that is quickly pushing many areas into an early start to fire season that we typically not see. These areas, especially in areas of the severe or exceptional drought, we are seeing fuel conditions that we would typically see in July and August are occurring now. We are seeing our fuel moistures in our sagebrush and in our timber fuels. They peaked earlier, meaning the fuel moisture was highest earlier in the season, and they have been declining ever since, showing that drying trend. We also, not only did they peak earlier, we saw those peaks of fuel moisture occur lower than what we would normally see just due to the prolonged dryness and due to the stress from the drought. So that is, again, giving us a lower fuel moisture in our sagebrush and in our timber areas at this time of year, much lower than what we would normally see in early to mid-June. Another impact the drought has on our fuel conditions is grass growth. We typically do not see a very strong green-up or a period where the grass is growing in times of prolonged extensive drought. So that is about the only positive going into the fire season, meaning if we have less grass growth, we have less fuel to burn. So that is going to be an important note at our lowest elevations where grass fires typically drive fire season. However, the rest of our especially mid and upper elevations, foothill and high terrain, is in areas that we have that significant drought across much of the West, is going to be certainly on high alert going into this fire season, and that has already started. We have many large fires over the Southwest, into the Great Basin, and also even up into Montana. We did have some recent precipitation up north, but even that recent precipitation and even some improvements to the drought is not enough to really impact the fuel enough to lower the fire potential threat. So another factor the drought has on our fuel conditions is not only are things drier, when we have drier conditions, they are more susceptible to ignition and also more susceptible to fire spread, where we have fires that are dominated by the fuel conditions and by terrain, meaning even in absence of significant weather, meaning high heat, strong winds, dry lightning, all those things that factor into increased potential for ignitions and fire spread, even in absence of that significant weather, we tend to see fires grow just on their own just because of the dryness of the fuel conditions. Another impact from the drought, especially across western Colorado into the Great Basin, is a widespread report of die-off in our pinyon juniper trees. And that die-off in the past typically has been a result of bug kill, but what they're finding this year is it's more in response to the prolonged drought. So we're seeing trees dying off just due to the drought, which again increases our fuel, at least the dead fuels that will respond and partake in fire spread. So I think that was all I really wanted to discuss with this slide. You've already seen the drought monitor, and again, this is a week old, but the drought outlook that we are seeing, you know, the areas out across the West that we are most concerned with, the drought will continue, persist, or intensify in many of those areas out West. So we're not expecting much improvement, and that, again, will be driving a lot of our fire potential forecast going forward. So with that, we can go down to the next slide, slide 10. And this slide shows our significant fire potential outlook for June. So this is now, we're halfway through the month, what we can expect for the rest of June. The areas indicated in red are showing our above normal expectations for fire potential. Areas in green show below normal, and everywhere that's obviously not shaded is just near normal fire potential. So our biggest concerns clearly are New Mexico into Arizona, up into western Colorado, Utah, and eastern and southern areas of Nevada. And also Northern California, especially in the mid and upper terrain, and also up into Oregon and Washington. Again, those areas have had very dry or very hot conditions recently, significant drought in many of those areas. We did have very low snowpack, especially for areas of the Southern Great Basin down into the Southwest. So again, that's continuing to perpetuate the fact that our fuel moistures are lower than what we would normally see this time of year. Areas in the green over Texas, Oklahoma, and into Arkansas, again, with the heavy rainfall that they've continued to see really consistently here over the last 30 to 60 days, those areas are expected to continue with below normal fire potential just due to the wetness. The rest of the country generally seeing near normal fire potential, and this includes Alaska and Puerto Rico as well. Hawaii, we're still seeing above normal fire potential for those drier conditions. The next slide shows this is going to be page 11, our significant fire potential for July. So going forward as we move into July, the main changes are going to be the expansion of the above normal fire potential further north into the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies along with the Great Basin, and also the removal of the above normal fire potential for the Southwest. This is largely attributed to the development of the monsoon. We are expecting it to develop this year, which has been a change in past years where we've had very poor monsoon development and just very dry conditions in the monsoon season, which again, those 2 years of really low, if any, monsoon moisture is what's been contributing to our longer term drought. But this year we are anticipating at least the monsoon to develop over the Southwest and hopefully improve conditions. Further north, it will take some time for that monsoon moisture to work its way north. Typically we see an increase in lightning across especially the Great Basin into Southern California as that monsoon moisture really starts to push north. So that initial increase in lightning will be more problematic and make our conditions more severe along with, well, with including emissions and then fire spread. And then as we, again, go into the warmer, what would typically be our warmer periods, those areas up in Montana and Oregon and Washington will again expand to include more areas for above normal potential. In California, the main concerns are going to be the foothills into the higher elevations, and also Hawaii still will remain above normal fire potential going through July. The next page, page 12, shows our significant fire potential outlook for August. Again, we are anticipating the development of that monsoon in July, and then eventually that moisture hopefully will push north into the southern half of the Great Basin into southwest Colorado to hopefully decrease that fire potential threat. It will be something we'll continue to watch. Again, if that monsoon does not develop as we expect, then that area of above normal fire potential will remain further south. So going into August, the main concerns, again, shifting north into all of the Northern Rockies area, also into the Dakotas, and then continuing in the Pacific Northwest and the foothills and higher elevations of California. So again, our threat will continue to push north, which is normal. Typically, our fire seasons become most active in the Southwest first, and then through July and August, keep pushing further north. So that trend is what we would normally expect. But again, the large area of above normal fire potential just due to these very dry conditions and the drought is going to be very significant. Moving down to page 13, this is our significant wildland fire potential for September. So So again, most of the Great Basin, or the Southern Great Basin, into the Southwest, staying out of that above normal fire potential, hoping that moisture really sets in and takes shape. And then the above normal fire potential will remain across Idaho into the Pacific Northwest and California. And this is mainly due to, again, the prolonged dryness, but also as we move into September, we typically get our cold fronts bringing us gustier winds, and that could be a drying trend as well. So as those cold fronts pick up and we get windier conditions, those are the main areas of concern. Again, above normal fire potential continues across Hawaii, Alaska, and Puerto Rico remain with normal fire potential along with the eastern two-thirds of the U.S. So the last slide of mine, slide 14, is just a summary of what we've already discussed. So again, more than half of the West is in extreme to exceptional drought, with nearly 90% of the West in some form of drought. Much of the western U.S. is forecast to have above normal significant fire potential at some point this summer, typically from south to north. Fuel dryness is trending about 2 to 4 weeks ahead of schedule in many places. So again, the fire behavior and the fire danger, what we are seeing now in June is typically what we would see in July or August. Fire potential is there this year in the areas that we indicated as above normal. But as we saw last year, critical fire weather is typically necessary to realize the potential. So in absence of that, many areas may not see the fire activity and the spread that is possible. But in the areas of those exceptional drought especially, even in absence of the critical fire weather, we will typically see those fires grow just driven by fuel. That concludes my portion of the presentation. I will now hand it over to Scott.
Thank you, Gina. This is Scott Handel of the Climate Prediction Center. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to draw your attention now to slide 15 and to have a discussion about the latest outlook for El Nino and La Nina. So during the past winter and into the early spring, we were in La Nina conditions, and what that generally means is that sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific were below normal. At the current time, and recently, and at the current time, these sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific have trended more toward near normal. And we're now in a neutral state of the El Nino, the El Nino Southern Oscillation, or ENSO neutral for short. Another way of saying this is that we would not be experiencing either El Nino or La Nina conditions at the current time. Moving ahead to the future, this ENSO neutral state is likely to continue through the summer and into the fall. And just as importantly, El Nino is by far the least likely scenario through at least the upcoming winter, with less than a 10% chance of occurring. So to put it another way, there's a greater than 90% chance that El Nino will not happen through at least the upcoming winter. Now I'm going to draw your attention to the next slide, slide 16, for the monthly forecast for July. On the left-hand panel, you can notice a lot of orange and reds on this map, and that indicates that above-normal temperatures are the most likely outcome for much of the country, with the greatest confidence in the interior west as well as the northeast. And on the right-hand side, for total precipitation, the brown areas on the map, which include the Pacific Northwest into the Northern Plains and parts of the southern panhandle of Alaska, below normal precipitation is the most likely outcome, while the green areas over the southeastern lower 48, as well as western Alaska and parts of southern mainland Alaska, indicate areas where above normal precipitation is the most likely outcome for the month of July. Those white areas indicated as EC indicates that equal chances of above or below normal temperatures or precipitation occurring in those areas. Turning our attention to slide 17, the next slide, and looking further ahead in the future to encompass all of July, August, and September, you notice that there's even more coverage of this orange and red on the left-hand panel of the map, which indicates that even more of the country, above normal temperatures is the most likely outcome, and with the highest confidence, again, in the northeast and parts of the interior west. And looking at the precipitation outlook for July, August, September, you could see an expansion of that brown area in the west, indicating areas where below normal precipitation is the most likely outcome. And this area extends from the Pacific Northwest and includes much of the Rockies and parts of the northern and central high plains.
while conversely, the green areas in the lower Mississippi Valley, parts of the southern plains extending to much of the eastern seaboard indicate areas where above normal precipitation is the most likely outcome. Uncertainty is very high for Alaska, but there's over parts of northern and western Alaska, above normal precipitation for the July, August, September period is slightly favored. Drawing your attention now to slide 18 for the U.S. drought outlook. Unfortunately, the drought outlook for the period is not very encouraging for most of the drought-stricken West. You can see that the large brown areas over much of the western lower 48 and then expanding eastward across the northern plains into the Great Lakes indicate areas where drought conditions are expected to persist, and the yellow regions are areas where drought development is possible. There is one small glimmer of hope here for parts of the southwest monsoon area. You can see that area shaded kind of in that lighter color in southern Arizona, New Mexico, and West Texas. These areas have a potential drought is expected to remain, but there's a potential for improvement. And this is due to the fact that the forecast models are less confident in a below normal precipitation forecast for these regions during the three-month period. It should be noted, however, that this slight glimmer of hope for this region may be short-lived. As we get deeper into it later in the monsoon season, forecast models are trending or converging on a more drier solution as we get deeper into the monsoon season or later into the monsoon season. Conversely, over the eastern lower 48, drought improvement or removal is likely for scattered areas of dryness for parts of the eastern seaboard, as well as for parts of Puerto Rico. And wrapping things up, drought persistence or drought development is possible for much of the Hawaiian Islands during this outlook period. So with that, I'm going to turn things back over to you, John, and that's it for TPC.
All right. Thanks so much, Scott. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you'd like to answer the question if possible. Chelsea, could you remind the call participants how they can ask a question and then please queue up the first question?
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. Again, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. The first question is from Seth Bornstein from the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. My question, two parts, is for Gina. Can you give us some historical context about what this fire season is looking like compared to previous years, even as recently as last year, which was a horrible year? Last year had that special unusual ignition system. How bad is it looking compared to previous years? Is this the worst we've seen? And then the second part, maybe someone would also like to join in here, is can you tell us how much, if any, of this is climate change related or climate change forced? Thank you.
Thank you for your question. This is Gina. I guess with respect to your first question about this fire season relating to past fire seasons and what are some of our expectations, that truly depends on the area. Looking out west, I will say the potential is certain in the foothills and higher elevations just due to the exceptional drought, which is the drought itself is one of the worst droughts we've certainly seen in such a large area and the severity recently. So with that respect, our larger fuels, our sagebrush, especially our pinyon juniper trees and our timber locations, those areas, the potential for ignition and fire spread will be quite a bit higher than what we've seen. So I think the main takeaway that we want to focus on this year is the severity of the fuel moisture, really the severity of the drought, the dryness of the fuel, and then the way those fuels respond when we do have ignition and fire spread. We will be seeing very extreme fire behavior, certainly conditions that we would not normally see in June, and then even once we get to July, again, those conditions are going to be what we typically see in August. So going into this fire season from a firefighting perspective, the fire behavior compared to what you would normally see for the time of year will probably be the most significant part. As always, fire potential only goes so far if we don't have the ignitions, or sometimes if we don't have the exceptional weather events providing us the wind or the dry or lightning and we don't see the starts, then that certainly has an impact on the type of fire season we see. But from a fire potential standpoint, what is capable this year, it's certainly much more severe than what we've seen in the past, just due to the fuel moistures associated with the drought in our mid to higher elevations across much of the West, predominantly the Great Basin, Rocky Mountain area, down to the Southwest, and parts of California. Those are really the most critical going into the next couple of months. With respect to your second question, whether this relates to climate change, I'm certainly not a climate expert, so I would like to defer those questions to a climate expert. But what I'm responding to for our fire season forecast is just certainly looking at the trends of where our weather has been, what our fuel conditions are like. The fuel conditions truly are a giant piece of the puzzle to the fire potential. If we don't have significant fuel loading, or we don't have a lot of fuels to burn, or they're not sufficiently dry enough, then typically we won't see very extreme fire seasons. So our fuel component is really a huge piece of our puzzle going into our fire season forecast. So what I focus on is what's been ongoing, what conditions we have leading into the fire season, and what expectations we have going forward.
Hey, Ted, this is Ira. I can, if you want, I can expand. I mean, there's not a lot that I can say. I cannot say that this particular dry conditions, fire potential, are for this year, are due to climate change. As you know, climate variability can also have an impact. But what we do know in terms of climate change is that we do expect in a warmer world to see more frequent and more intense drought and also heat waves. So when you have those two combinations, we do expect for in an area where it's very dry and warm for, you know, higher potential for fire. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Well, yes, this is also Scott Handel. I'd like to jump in here, too, from the Climate Prediction Center. I could speak a little bit to recent trends, too, because recent trends also play a role in our outlooks as well. And if you look at the last 15 years, there has been a strong trend toward above normal temperatures, particularly over much of the western lower 48. It's one of the strongest areas, actually, of warm trends in the last 15 years. And they're in during the July, August, September time period. And there's also a trend toward dryness for parts of the northern and central Rockies during this particular season during the last 15 years.
Thank you.
The next question is from Brian Sullivan from the Bloomberg News. Your line is now open.
Thanks. I came in late, so I apologize if I'm asking you to repeat anything. But my question basically is, you know, how does this drought compare to the one that gripped California for 5 or 6 years not too long ago in terms of severity? And the second question I would have would be, you know, how do you look at the prospects for heat, especially in California and along the more populated areas as we go through the summer?
Hi, for the drought question, I would have to say that we would need to put you with one of the drought experts from CPC or even NCEI to specifically answer that question that you have. So if you can email John, we can put you in contact with one of them.
Sure.
Yeah, hi, Brian. You have my email address, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
I'm showing no further questions.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you, Chelsea. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all the speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end the call by reminding you to mark your calendar for a couple of upcoming events. First, the release of the June 2021 U.S. Climate Report is scheduled for July 9th. and the release of the June 2021 Global Climate Report is scheduled for July 13th. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory site later today. If you have any other informational needs, please contact me at, again, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. That's nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. And again, my contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time.